Let me call this meeting of the Loup County Mad River Basin Development Commission to order for October 9th, 2019. Please set your cell phones on stun and let's all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, roll call, please.
Tom Kuki.
Present.
Tom Gassetti.
Here.
Anthony Brodnick. Absent. Derek Nimitz.
Here.
Dave Castellano.
Here.
Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert Ochi.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Here. So, Robert is the new appointee from the city of Hammond. Welcome him aboard, and we'll give him an opportunity to speak so we continue to grow. First time in quite a few years, Mr. Wicklund has been sitting at the table with Mr. Repay. So, next item is the approval of the minutes from September 11th, 2019. Any motions, changes, modifications? What say you?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from September 11th, 2019. Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Be there none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. In there, read them all. Remember, they're all on the website, including all of the audio for this, gauges. Sign up over at the table for email stuff as far as what's going on. We're trying to put all the things that we have to address and the issues that you see as a part of this community, making sure things like September 2008 are limited in our lifetime. This continues to move forward as we engage all the municipalities in the watershed to try to make sure that we as a whole try to not have to see those green pictures ever again as it relates to something that happens anywhere within this community. You know, again, this is a $275 million man-made project that if you don't take care of it, this is kind of the issues that you have. After we actually have money and people start showing up and actually wanting stuff, now that we have it, it was a very challenging scenario to try to get some help in making sure these things didn't occur. Now that we have everybody engaged, the process has been very fluid, although we continue to improve it and continue to engage as many of the communities and as many of the individuals associated with making sure things like that don't happen again. It's working. It's one of the true economic development projects, in at least in my opinion, that is a foundation of making sure everything else that happens under that banner can move forward and not have to worry about something as fundamental as stormwater. Moving along instead of my speech. Let me use my time right now to let Robert introduce himself and say a few words. Robert, welcome.
Oh. My name is Robert Ochi. I'm a resident of Hammond. I grew up in the Crandon region for the last 28 years. I'm an architect and construction manager by trade. I have a business in Chicago, basically developing projects from initial conception all the way through implementation and closeout for the city of Chicago. And most of the projects that we've been involved with are myself and been associated with Chicago Public Schools, Chicago Housing Authority, and City Colleges of Chicago. Locally, I've done some projects in construction management here in Northwest Indiana. Originally from Dyer, I went to Lake Central, graduated from Purdue University, and I'm just, I'm representing the city of Hammond, and glad to be here. And this is a very important commission, I guess, since 2008, but before that, I think it's a great organization and commission that's kind of overseeing the dollars that need to be spent to maintain this river now that all the infrastructure work has been done. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome again. All right, moving right along, let's start paying some bills.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of the claims for October of 2019 for the amount of $615,673.12.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay.
As normal, we'll go over some of the larger items, and if you have any questions about anything else, I will try to answer them. Number one, LS Construction for $239,903.40 for the Harrison Street Bridge project. That project is slowly moving along and should be complete at least drivable by October 31st, so that's a good thing. USGS gauge stations, our quarterly payment for those, $24,710. Pangaea Corporation for $15,930 for the painting of the valves. If you remember, we awarded them a contract for a not to exceed $31,000. It was time and material, so it took a lot less time and a lot less material than they had anticipated, which is a good thing. Maryville Storm Water Utility for $149,805.90 for the Meadowdale Lateral Floodwater Storage Watershed Project that you will hear about later this evening, along with Great Lakes Electrical Maintenance, otherwise known as GLEM, for their 2 months of service to us for August and September, one being $5,958. And then the other being $10,134. The $10,134 was when we had our little incidents with the copper thieves. Patrick Engineering for the Lake Station levee for $32,525. And then Vail Appraisal for $9,750 for the pump station easements in Munster, which those are the easements that we need per the Army Corps so that we have all of the proper real estate interests that they require. So if there's anything else, any other ones that you'd like me to handle, I could give you the update on.
All right, any questions for Mr. Repay and paying the bills? Either or none, we have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Thomas Lipke.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellano.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Oji.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Dan. Moving right along.
So moving into my report, and certainly, as I said, this is just a brief synopsis, and if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to entertain those. We've spoken about the Harris Avenue Bridge. We're very appreciative of the Army Corps with the expedited review of the 408 permit to help expedite the construction of the bridge. It's been delayed as it is, but that permit will help us move it along a little bit quicker. We anticipate, as I said, it to be open for traffic on the 31st of October. The closeout for the Hobart Railroad Bridge was our parking lot that needed to be remilled and paved over. That had started and should be paved or have been paved today. I didn't go out there and check it today because I had other issues, but I'm assuming that it will be paved and be striped accordingly. The sluice gate painting, I said, Pangaea went under the contract amount, which is a good thing. Lake Station levy, we've met along with, I haven't met, but our engineer met with both DNR and IDEM regarding the initial thoughts and their designs. They have another meeting scheduled for next week down in Indianapolis for the levy proposal, as well as the Rock Riffle Dam, and we hope to finalize those designs here hopefully the next month, and they will be bid out hopefully in January of 2020 for award for our construction season next summer. Pump station security, we have gone through all the pump stations. We're waiting for some proposals to come back. We were hoping that it would be done before this meeting, however it took a little bit more time. Regarding Hart Ditch, and you know, this commission has already agreed to or has been in agreement with both the town of Munster as well as the Lake County Drainage Board, which is the Lake County Commissioners, to help fix some of the issues that are in Hart Ditch with the erosion at three particular locations. So we had a great meeting with both the surveyor's office, the commissioners, regarding this matter and the timeline. The timeline, tentatively, from what I understand, will be the commissioners will put it out for bid in October, award in November, and assuming, you know, contractual language and how long it takes to get through that, it will be sometime in early 2020 when they start putting boots on the ground. In addition, at the direction of this board, you sort of wanted me to revisit with our friends at the advisory board. This year has been a slow year with applications, trying to make sure that they know we still exist and that see what the importance of some of their projects are. We had a great discussion. Some of the issues that were brought up they were, Hobart was very appreciative of us doing the railroad bridge, and they noticed that some of the projects that we did or that they had scheduled no longer needed because of what we did at that bridge. So that was a good thing. We're also looking at possibly updating our report that was done in 2013, at least on a just an overview to get that up to date, as well as possibly doing some hydraulic models further south and into a deep river to make sure what we're doing and what they're proposing is going to work for the overall system. The September rain event that everyone likes to talk about, the river handled it the way it was supposed to. We acted accordingly. Anywhere from 6 to 9 inches fell in about 48 hours, depending on where you were. We did have some blockages that were caused from that, some downed trees. We have some downed trees in Dyer that we're going to have to deal with. We have a large tree in Hart's Ditch that had come down that we need to deal with. And we're going to clean out some of the bridge underpasses where there were some issues with some clogs. But other than that, we only had to close North Cod, and that's just because it went to the elevation that we needed to by our manual. Our manuals are there under the flood handbooks. If you want to ever look to see what elevation your road will be closed, that will dictate it. So we decided to do that. I believe that was Friday night, and it was closed until Monday. And everything else seemed to work out just fine. Beyond that, we're doing some permitting for the removal of the sandbar off of Kennedy Avenue, along with the high velocity channel. We're working on getting that contract together for the 2008 video so we can sort of document what happened. And then the Autobahn Society that we entered into an agreement with, they are starting as of this coming Friday to start doing the work to fix the invasive species problem issue and sort of improve the wetlands that we have already to make them better. So that will start, my hope is, this Friday, although rain is projected, so I'm not sure if that negatively impacts them. Beyond that, I think I've hit on almost everything, and if I didn't, feel free to ask.
All right, bring it back to the commission. Any questions for Mr. Repay about what's going on in the field?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Repay, where is the location that the Autobahn is focusing?
There's two locations. One is the Rookery, which is what most people call the Rookery, which is just to the west of Klein on the east side, and then 94 is the, I guess, would be considered the north side of it. So it's the Blue Heron Rookery is what I call it and what they're working on. The other part that they're working on is bordered by Georgia. Well, I'll start with this. 94 on the south, Georgia Avenue on the, or Georgia Street, on the west side. On the north side would be Ironwood Park, and then on the east side would be Martin Luther King. It's right where the four culverts that run underneath the railroad track are located. Those are the two subject locations.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Dan, I would like to compliment you regarding the Harrison to Avenue Bridge. That's going to be welcome news for the constituents and elected officials for the 5th and 6th District that's in Gary. And considering the fact that that bridge, which is a really nice project. The concept I have right now is the fact that we did a groundbreaking for the Rookery in Highland at one time. And I think it would probably be a real good thing that we as a commission can do a groundbreaking for this bridge, because it really is a great asset to that. And it really adds to the IUN University and all the members in that community.
Well, if you can assist me to find someone in the city of Gary that would sort of lead that effort, we'll try to do it on our side.
Well, I'd like to know that with the commission's permission, I think I'd like to, on the 14th, on WLTH Radio, when we have our program, I'll make that announcement about the bridge. Thank you.
What announcement are you going to make?
That the Ridge would be open and available on October the 31st, I think. A lot of people in that particular community would love to hear from it.
Is that still something that we're looking at being able to do?
It's all weather dependent. If we get a monsoon for the next, I don't want to say it, but you know, for whatever the period of time, it's going to delay. It delays the laying, putting the blacktop down. So I mean, we can say that's an idea, that's our goal. But I don't want to commit to the 31st.
No,
knowing the way Harrison has gone for us this year and last year, I would only assume the worst and hope for the best.
Or that, how about something, if you want to put it on the radio, Dave, to maybe take into consideration that we plan to have the bridge open by the time the asphalt plant closes.
That's a good suggestion. That's something I can follow through with.
You know, and that usually gives you a little bit more time, and if we do it early, it would be shocking because there's a governmental entity that got it done early.
This would be...
Even though it's supposed to be done 2 years ago.
Early.
Right? You know, so, hey.
One thing I want to say that the bridge is a great asset to that community, and the people in that whole community would be glad to hear from, as well as elected officials, because they're tired of going around the various routes in order to get to Maryville or to other shopping areas.
I will tell you this, from a flood protection spot, what this commission has done is eliminate yet another closure. I mean, I don't go through the neighborhood, but I can tell you from a closure standpoint, what you've done with Clark Street, what you've done with Georgia, what you've done with 35th Street, and now what you've done with Harrison now has removed all those from being closed by people from throwing sandbags. And Harrison, as everyone knows, Tamarack Hall was destroyed because partially that wasn't closed properly. So that's from my perspective. From a neighborhood's perspective, I'm certain that that's exciting to not have to do a detour. But from a flood protection, it's exciting just to know that we will not have to put a sandbag out there in the event that there's a high water event.
Hey, Dan, on the west side of the bridge, there's looks like a, not a canoe launch, but some sort of...
There's a pier.
Pier there. Yeah. Looks like parts of that pier are deteriorated. We have plans to do some.
We were going to revisit that after they finished the bridge.
Okay.
We didn't want to go in there and do it in the event that they accidentally hit it. It was just a small pier that they used. Some use it for fishing. Some use it for launching the canoes or launching boats. It's not an official canoe launch, but it is something that has been used for small boats. You can pull up right there off of Gilroy Stadium, and you can walk your boat over there.
I mean, I think, like you said, when they're done, we should move.
Probably in the springtime is the best.
Okay.
Hey, Dan, thank you first and foremost with regards to all the work for the late night hours during the rain event in September. That wasn't an easy one, so thank you and all the team associated with that. The Hobart Railroad Bridge being completed, how has that been viewed with regards to that event, and what did we see?
Hobart's really excited about the railroad bridge. They have noticed a considerable difference as it relates to Duck Creek, which is the main feeder into that. As you know, the Lake George Dam always controls water flow, so that really won't see an impact. But what you normally saw the impact was Duck Creek, because it couldn't go any faster because of that 3-foot differential between upstream and downstream. So Hobart is really excited about that. Matter of fact, I sort of touched on it during our advisory board application. They're actually going to remove some of their plans to fix Duck Creek as a part of their master plan because they don't need it anymore. At least they don't feel they need it anymore because of that being an easier transition. We're still trying and studying to make sure that it's gotten through faster so it has less of an effect on Gary, because as you know, Deep River takes precedence over Little Cala at the confluence. So they're excited, and it's always good to spend time with a bunch of good people at 2 and 3 in the morning chasing down pump stations. You know, just on a note, we did receive two alarms on our SCADA system. One was for Burn North, and that was pump one failed on us early in the evening. We came back the next day. Some debris must have got caught into it, but it is working fine now. And then we had high water levels at Grant West, which has three 15,000 gallon per minute pumps and a sump pump, all of them were running because I went out there. It just couldn't keep up. It just was simply that much water. But it eventually came back into normal levels, and there were no incidents of flooding in that area. So it's just a lot of water.
With the event in Hobart during that September, did they see any differences with the bridge now?
Yeah, it went down a lot quicker on the Duck Creek side, which goes down County Line Road and in that vicinity. Not so much on Lake George, just because Lake George is Lake George. It has to go over the dam. But they also didn't see the impact. If you know the area has that sanitary station underneath the bridge, it didn't get impacted as much. Usually the water gets right up to that building.
Right.
So there wasn't that situation because the water was flowing. And the previous year, we cleaned out Deep River. So at least we cleaned it out to, was it Ripley Street? So all that water should be free-flowing in that area. And then with the later aerial photography that we're going to do, hopefully that is consistent with what we believe that is the case.
You know, just for everybody's edification, with this much rain prior to all the things that the community as a whole worked on in this project, we would have had some serious problems around around all of the ditches and rivers here. So, knock wood, it's a good thing. The diligence can't be let up, though, at all. One more thing I had a question on was the advisory board. Are the communities helping as far as putting people on this thing, or are we still looking for folks?
We're only missing, I think, two communities. Two or three, Cedar Lake, St. John, Highland, and Cary.
Good.
Yeah, Lake Station's got someone. But it's an advisory board, and we constantly are asking for...
Yeah. A lot of work, doesn't get paid. They get lunch.
They get lunch. They got a good lunch. So Cedar Lake and St. John, they're so far at the tip, and there's only a partial community. I'm certain it's not the highest priority. Highland is represented by John Bach. Generally, during our normal O&M meetings that we have, and Gary's representative here, we got two representatives, plus we take care of all the pump stations and such.
Got it. And then the pump stations, the one that had all the copper cut out of it, and any issues anymore?
I mean, we had pump one fail for the time being, but it went back up and running. So, no, we're good, and hopefully no one else wants to steal copper. Copper prices have gone down since then, so maybe it'll be less valuable.
Okay.
As I just cursed myself.
No, Dr. Wood, though. All right, any other questions for Mr. Repay about what's going on? Moving right along, Ms. Mills, nice to see you. How you been? Good, nice to see you. What's going on with the United States Army Corps of Engineers?
So many things.
Could only imagine.
Good evening, Natalie Mills with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's good to see you guys. I haven't been here in several months. I was in training and many other things, but I'm here today and good to see you all. The leaky wall contract that was awarded, we have a pre-con scheduled for, it's tentatively scheduled for Tuesday, October 16th. I think I mentioned before it was awarded to Roush. The contract duration is 180 days. Which would take them to March for a contract completion date. We've asked them to provide their schedule just so we can see what's the plan for that duration. So once I have that, I can share that with Dan and he can inform the group. The issues with Hart Ditch, we are planning to provide some recommendations. The modeling is ongoing and scheduled for completion this month. And at that time, we'll be able to provide some recommendations, on a path forward in that area. The in-project mitigation contract, that work is ongoing and scheduled to be ongoing through 2023. Most recently, they are continuing with invasive species management to include mowing. And ongoing invasive species management will continue. They are going to be doing some seeding in the wintertime. There was a beaver dam that they weren't able to remove for quite some time, so they did get it removed, and they'll be able to come back and seed in the winter in that area. Hobart Marsh mitigation. That work is ongoing and will continue through 2021. They are also doing invasive species removal, and additional invasive species will be planned for the next 2 weeks. That is all that I have. Are there any questions for me?
Any questions for Ms. Mills with regards to what the Corps is working on?
I guess I have a question, Mr. Yes, Commissioner. The work on the leaky wall, will that be able to go on during the winter? I imagine that's some kind of a caulk or epoxy or grout. With the cold weather, will that be able to?
That will be an issue. And so we're trying to see how they plan to mitigate that. What we've spec'd out does require them to be working in temperatures that are 40 degrees plus. So we're trying to see what they have planned.
Thank you.
So it's next spring?
Yeah.
Okay.
It very well could be, yes.
And then what about a timeline on the recommendations with regards to hard ditch by Wicker Park?
So this month.
This month?
Mm-hmm.
This month.
We'll plan to sit down with Dan.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Hope you feel better.
Thank you.
All right, moving right along. Next up, we get a presentation from Merivale Stormwater Utility and Christopher Burke Engineering. Those come up to the podium, introduce yourself, get the tech all working. Don't let Repay go in.
I got you.
Yeah, I'll do this. You want this one?
It doesn't matter.
All right.
We'll see now.
I think that would fly better.
Real good.
I guess you're going to see it.
Greetings. My name is Matt Lake. I'm the executive director for the Merivale Stormwater Utility. I'm here today with Darren Olson from Christopher Burke Engineering. Also here with us is Bud Christ, our board president, Anthony Kenning from DLZ, and Frank Stewart from DLZ. And first of all, I do want to thank the commission for supporting these efforts. It's very vital and important to us, as it is to you and everybody in the region, to implement flood control and all of our strategies and get all the best available data together, collected, and then get it constructed and make these improvements happen. So with that, I'm going to let Darren Olson take it away here and visit the results of this effort.
Thank you, Matt. Again, my name is Darren Olson with Christopher Burke Engineering, and we embarked on a study and some design work for the town. And I'm going to summarize that here today. The first part is going to focus on the design of two flood storage facilities within the town. And the second is going to talk about the results of the study of the headwaters of Meadowdale Lateral, otherwise known as Turkey Creek Lateral 6. So this, and we're on to the town's flood storage project. And where this is located, the upper right shows the location in the headwaters of Turkey Creek. And then the exhibit to the left shows the general drainage pattern. Water is coming from Hobart into Gary, into unincorporated Lake County, and then making its way south. The dotted line is the town of Merivale boundary. Comes across there. As you get from the bluer to the more yellow to the orange to the red, you're getting lower in elevation. So you can see that water is traveling south, where it then drains into the town, through the town, into Innsbruck Country Club, into Turkey Creek, and then makes a sharp right turn heading back towards the northeast. There's about 7.2 square miles of drainage area, so a lot of drainage moving through the system. 4.2 square miles is located north of the town boundary in Hobart, Gary, and unincorporated Lake County, and that flood water generally, again, drains through the town and into Turkey Creek. This is one of the town's highest priorities. The town did a stormwater master plan in 2014, and due to the impact that we saw in 2008, as well as what our modeling showed, this rose right to the top of the town's priorities. There's an estimated 439 structures that would be impacted during a 100-year event. 9 structures are in the floodway, 49 roads, local roads, that would be impacted by flooding during a 100-year event. There are repetitive loss properties. There's also water quality hotspots. So through that master plan with the town, we developed multiple stormwater storage and conveyance projects that would be required to alleviate this flooding. And the one that we are talking about today that we've done design work for was also mentioned and discussed in the Little Cal Comprehensive Watershed Plan that we see here. These are the two stars that are located on that exhibit. So zooming in to the project at hand, it is two flood storage facilities. We see 57th Avenue, we see 61st Avenue, Harrison Middle School is down at the south end there. Meadowdale Lateral is draining from the north as it's entering the town just at the top of the exhibit here, draining down to the south. And what we're proposing is to store that water as it gets into flood stage and leaves the banks of the stream. It will then flow into these purple flood storage facilities that will also provide habitat, water quality benefit, as well as to flood protection for a number of the residential structures, roadways, and the school as well. So what we've completed on this project, when we approached you over a year ago, we had done some preliminary analysis. We've expanded on that considerably. This project is located, part of it's on a school property and part of it's on the town property. Easements from the school have been obtained. We've also coordinated with IDNR and their coastal program because some work had previously been done in this area, and we wanted to make sure that we were in concert with what had been previously completed. Wetland delineations are done. Full design plans, specs, and SWIP have been completed. Indiana DNR floodway construction permit has been applied for and issued. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wetland permits has been applied for and issued for this project. We have submittals that are completed and pending to be submitted to the Lake County Surveyor's Office and the Soil Water Conservation District. We've completed an engineer's estimate of probable cost. The North Basin, which is at the purple that you saw at the northwest corner, that is $845,000. And the South Basin, that's located on town property, is approximately $1.7 million. And really the goal of this project, we've got the permits laid out, plans are complete, specs are ready to go. The goal is to bid this project out this winter to have in-the-ground flood storage available for the residents as soon as possible. So that's part one of the presentation, really focused on just that flood storage design within the town. Any questions on that, we'd be happy to answer that.
All right, gentlemen, any questions with regards to that presentation? We've seen this one before. Was it 18 or 17? 17? 17. Dan? Ish? 16? Okay.
We asked you guys to go up beyond the limits of the
part
town.
Two. Yep. That's part two.
That's part two? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
This was the final design of the two basins. Our intent is to do, we'll probably put it out as phase one, phase two. We'll do the north basin first, put that out for bid, get that all constructed, and then do the south basin after that. Okay. So just do the cost and everything else.
And I can't remember with regards to the actual stream. What do we call that?
Lateral 6.
Lateral, that's still lateral.
Yeah,
oh, lateral.
It's coming down, yeah. So the top line started lateral 6.
Okay, so lateral 6. Who does the maintenance on that structure?
The Lake County Surveyor's Office. It's a regulated drain.
It's a regulated drain. The whole thing all the way up to I-65?
Correct.
It is. So how have they been performing as it relates to in within your community and based upon the work that's been done here?
You know, I have approached Bill Emerson about doing another round of maintenance on lateral 6, including clearing and snagging and some sediment removal.
It's ongoing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Last time they did it was probably about maybe 12 years ago now.
I think actually our staff is going with the surveyor's office, I think tomorrow and Friday, to walk this section of the ditch, and this is scheduled for clearing in their next cycle.
Is that in 12 years?
I think it's next year.
Okay. So if it hasn't been cleared in 12 years, I guess, how are we doing the modeling based upon these recommendations if it hasn't been cleared and all of a sudden it clears? Is there going to be a volume change or what kind of impact is that going to have?
It won't have a significant impact, and the next presentation will talk about kind of what are the controlling features within this watershed, but largely it's the railroad crossings and the other roadway crossings that are affecting the flood heights here rather than the creek itself.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Do you guys have a source of funding for the North Basin and South Basin work?
We have our stormwater fees we'll be using. We may, just to let you know, be submitting an application for partial cost share, but we're going to tackle the bulk of this with our stormwater utilities.
Thank you. Any other questions, gentlemen? Okay.
So on to part two, which was the study of the headwaters. So we're going to move upstream from the town and focus on that. We, over the past year, have requested and received numerous amounts of information from the surveyor's office to the FEMA flood insurance studies, previous drainage studies that were done in Hobart as well, the Hobart Marsh Plan. Gary provided us with their storm sewer atlases and all the drainage information that they had. We even got the old plans for I-65, which we see here to the right. And we're able to compile all that and complete a drainage study. We obtained topographic information of a lot of the culverts in the headwaters, which play a significant role in how drainage works up there. We then completed hydrologic and hydraulic modeling of the headwaters to come up with an existing condition as well as development of several drainage improvement projects that could improve drainage in the headwaters, and then did some cost analysis of that. So the headwaters, and you see here the watershed shown in purple. As I said previously, and the regulated drains are shown in blue. This is 6.2 square miles. It flows from Hobart under I-65 into Gary, where it then turns south into unincorporated Lake County very briefly, and then into the town. So it's flowing from towards the southwest, and then it hits Turkey Creek and then makes a 270-degree turn and then heads back towards the northeast. And so that's kind of the situation that we were really left with as part of the glaciers that that were in this region. We looked at the drainage way within the four jurisdictions, Hobart, Gary, unincorporated Lake County, and Maryville. There are approximately 15 culvert crossings or different roadway crossings. And the yellow that's tough to read because there are so many of them, starting up at the very northern part of the Norfolk Southern Railroad. There is a 27-inch pipe that goes under that then goes to I-65, which is this roadway right there. There are three 27-inch culverts that drain under there towards the school. A long, shallow ditch that then goes into an over 1 mile long culvert when we get into Gary. So this is then enclosed in a culvert for nearly a mile, then heads south into the town, drains through a number of culverts through some residential areas in town. Eventually, I believe that's the Canadian National Railroad at the very bottom, before it then goes into Innsbruck Country Club and then into Turkey Creek. We've got I-65, two railroad culverts. The length of this is very, very long, where it's 5.7 linear miles of stream length with very little vertical drop, only 18 feet of vertical drop. So when you do the math, this is a very, very shallow water course that's trying to drain southwest just to then drain back towards the northeast. When we look at this profile, so this is a profile of the river from the hydraulic model. On the left is where it enters into Innsbruck Country Club and merges with Turkey Creek. Up at the far right, you can see I-65. This little crossing there, that's the Norfolk Southern Railroad. But you can really just see how shallow it is and how there's these series of impediments, which are the different roadway crossings. And that large Gary culvert, the very long one through the center, And it's just a very, very shallow profile that's really impacted by these different roadway crossings. The 100-year flood profile that we calculated from our model is shown in blue. I'll get into that in a little bit more detail on a slide or two. So getting up very much towards the headwaters, we see I-65 is right here. That's the Norfolk Southern Railroad. That's the railroad that's running on generally east-west. In the headwaters here, we've got a very, very shallow profile as well. We've got 7,000 linear feet as that water's trying to get from the wetland that's on the upper right down to the school and to the Gary Culvert that begins at the lower left. 7,000 linear feet, the vertical drop is only 2 feet. So extremely shallow. But we're also battling our series of culverts that are very, very flat and are actually not pointed in the right direction. You've got this under the Norfolk Southern, our invert there is 629.2. But the culverts under I-65 are closer to 630. So that water's got to build up in this wetland even to then make it through the culverts that are under I-65. There's been a tremendous amount of wildlife issues out here. The beaver dams that occur in a flat system like this, the beavers hear the water flowing, and the first thing they do is try to stop it. So I know there's been a tremendous amount of work with the wildlife eradication. The surveyor's office has done maintenance on the portion of the ditch to the west of I-65. That's the outline that you see in red. That whole section was cleaned out several years ago, but the access is extremely difficult. Even to get our surveyors out here was very labor-intensive. To do the ditch clearing was very labor-intensive. They had to use matting the whole way because this area is regulated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers because of the wetlands that are out here. So very, very challenging situation out here. When we did the hydrologic and hydraulic modeling, you can see the area in blue is the area that would be potentially inundated during that 100-year storm event. So we're back to our channel profile here, and I'll point your attention towards the line in blue. That is the 100-year flood profile that was calculated by our hydrologic and hydraulic modeling that we did using U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, HEC HMS, and HEC RAS modeling software. And that's one thing to point out, and this gets to a question that was asked earlier. The profile here is generally a series of level pools that are created by these various impediments, and that's exacerbated by the fact that there's just really no slope to this channel, especially up in the headwaters. So there are a lot of flat level pool areas. The CN Railroad down at the far left side before it enters into Turkey Creek, there's a very serious impediment within the town that creates essentially a level pool back throughout the whole town during that 100-year flood event, which was seen in the 2008 event. So given this, we looked at a series of drainage improvements that could be done in the headwaters that would provide relief to all the jurisdictions within this watershed. Alternative one, which is towards the west, towards the left in the circle, was looking at flood storage within unincorporated Lake County. Alternative two was looking at a storm sewer that would go from the headwaters and essentially cross that sub-watershed divide to drain down into Lake George, into Deep River, and into Lake George. And final alternative three was trying to put some additional floodwater storage within the headwaters to see what sort of impact that would have. So I'm going to zoom in. So the next three slides are going to zoom in on each one of these areas. So my next slide is going to zoom in on the area for alternative one. Zooming in, we can see Meadowdale Lateral. It's coming from the right-hand side and then making its way south as it's about to enter into the town, coming out of the long culverts in Gary. And we looked at these areas in yellow here were different flood storage options that we looked at. This is all right now vacant land under various ownership. Some of it's City of Gary, some of it's the town, there's some privately owned as well. I'm sorry, not the town, the school district, so some privately owned as well. And so what we did is we entered this into the model to see what sort of impact that we would have, and we looked at five really different scenarios here with varying levels of flood storage. Alternative 1A was just looking at the area to the south here. 1B was looking at the area to the north. 1C was a smaller subset of that area to the north. You know, the ground gets very high as we move north here, and so 1B gets expensive because we have to hog out and haul off a lot of material in order to create flood storage. And then 1D and 1E looked at varying combinations of these. And so what I prepared was a table at the bottom showing for these different alternatives, how much flood storage are we providing, and that varies from, I think, about 60 acre feet up to approximately 170 acre feet. So that's a tremendous amount of flood storage being provided here by excavating this area out. There is a potential, if we were to excavate 1C, there's an old meander of the channel we see here with this wetland. We could potentially do a little re-meandering of the channel as well for some water quality benefit. And then these different alternatives provide different levels of flood reduction and flood benefit to Hobart, to Gary, to unincorporated Lake County, and also to Merrillville. And you see as the flood storage goes up, generally the impact, especially in Gary and unincorporated areas, goes up quite a bit. So this is the maximum amount of flood reduction that we would see under the range of events that we've looked at. Is considerable in this area because that's where the flood storage is at. So it's really having an effect in lowering that flood profile through here. And as we get into Merrillville, we also see some benefits as well from that. So in general, it ranges from up to a 1.3 feet of flood reduction for the greatest alternative, which is 1D that had the nearly 170 acre feet of flood storage and also had the largest cost as well. Alternative 2 was a 60-inch diameter diversion sewer going from the headwaters right at the railroad culvert, and then that would cross the watershed divide, so it's got to go through quite a bit of high ground and then discharge into a ravine that would then go into Deep River and eventually into Lake George. This whole project would be located in Hobart. There would be a lot of easements or land acquisition that would be required here. This is also the where the Hobart Marsh Plan is at, and there's property that's owned by both the state and private entities here. And what we'd want to do if this were to move forward, just do a little bit of additional analysis, because all this water eventually gets to Lake George. We're sending it there quicker, hopefully ahead of the major part of the flood. We'd want to just verify that with some additional modeling. But this has some very significant flood reduction benefits in Hobart, and much less as we head towards Gary, unincorporated areas, and into the town. And finally, alternative 3, this investigated, can we create additional flood storage? Oh, yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but sure. Go back to your last slide. And that. Where's the 1.6 foot benefit in Auburn? In Lake George, or?
It would be within this area right here, within the marsh area.
So there's no residences there, or very minimal.
That's correct. There are some, I believe, where this would have the benefit would be up north, is if I were to extend the screen up north, there are residences that are up in that area there.
So you're talking about reducing, I'm sorry, the pool level north of the tracks and east of 65?
That is correct. Yep, that's correct. Any other questions on this?
And just above that slide, the dark area in the middle near the top, that's essentially the headwaters. There's an elementary school up there that is perched up on the old lake ridge, and so that would be the headwaters of it.
Right. Okay. So alternative 3 was looking at additional flood storage within this exact area that we're talking about right now. There would be all that flood storage would be in Hobart. Again, there would be wetland impacts. There'd be coordination because this is within the marsh plan area. We looked at some varying levels of flood storage, and essentially this would be taking this low area and making it even lower to provide more flood storage. It provided, quite honestly, minimal benefit. Within Hobart, 0.3 feet of flood level reduction, but as we move further downstream within the sub-watershed, very little flood benefit. We did look at one final scenario where we would combine alternatives 1E and alternative 2. That part of it, again, would be in unincorporated Lake County. Some of it would be in Hobart. And that provided, as you can imagine, flood reduction benefits both in the unincorporated Gary areas as well as in Hobart. So with that, I would entertain any questions on part two.
You had mentioned off the CN trestle at Turkey Creek that as a major impediment. Can you expound on that just a little bit?
Sure.
I mean, is that similar to what we dealt with in Hobart?
It very well might be. I'm not 100% familiar with the Hobart one, but it is a it's an elliptical culvert, and because the railroad is so high, essentially all of that water then begins to back up behind there. That culvert has a limited capacity. I believe it's approximately 72 by 96 elliptical culvert. And with this full 7.2 square miles of water coming towards that, it then creates a level pool that backs up water upstream of that within the town.
Head differential is?
Yep, it is on the downstream side. The upstream side is approximately six. There you go. That shows it right there.
Technology.
Yeah. Well, we can open up a culvert that easily. Yeah, so about 3 feet of head differential. There are properties downstream of the railroad, though, that are low, and are at least one of them is a repetitive loss structure. So the answer to this simply isn't just making that culvert much bigger, because we would pass part of that problem downstream.
The 1 mile Gary culvert, how often is that maintained and cleaned?
I'm sorry, which culvert was that?
The 1 mile Gary culvert.
I don't know the answer to that. I certainly would be willing to reach out to the individual at the city that provided us that information. It would be happy to report back on that.
But that's part of the regulated drain, right? So 12 years would have been the last time. So, I mean, that's got to be packed.
Well, maintenance is done also. Like, we have a box culvert as part of the system that the county maintains, and we call them every time it's plugged up, because it's got cracks right down the front.
Oh, it does. All right.
Yeah. So we actually, you know.
Okay.
And then
so you're paying, you're watching it.
Yeah, we coordinate with them a lot.
Just south of Bailey School.
Yeah, but it'd be, that's where the beavers are going to go all the time, right? I have a question. So this is outstanding. Thank you. So this is a lot of the questions that we had as it related to the last time, so that helped quite a bit. So this headwater study and the alternatives that you provided, that's in addition to part one, correct?
Absolutely.
So part one still has to happen.
Yep.
You do part two, all that other cool stuff that goes on is not going to impact anything that you're proposing as far as part one.
Correct. It's going to help. It'll all help out.
But we just researched some of these properties here. We found that a number of these properties are on tax sale right now. I met with our attorney, Joe Svetnoff, and we're to transfer and acquire those parcels for now. I also talked to Craig Zanstra from Lake County Parks. This is part of their Parks Open Space Plan. So our intent in the future is to make this more of a nature preserve, multi-beneficial with, you know, flood storage, different types of ecological habitats, wildlife habitat. You know, so multi-purpose. City of Gary owns some, the school city of Gary.
which I believe is kind of like a quasi-state government entity. But I think if we can acquire all of the property, I would say that we would end up, whatever we got off a tax sale, we would deed it over to Lake County Parks or Lake County so that they would eventually own all of it. That would be the ideal scenario from a management perspective. And but I think this is, has, you know, a lot of potential, a lot of merit. Can be phased in over time. And, you know, again, you can see the multiple benefits here with regards to storage and benefits lateral six and multi-communities throughout this this region. So so yeah, that's, to me, it's, when I saw this, I got really excited about it. But you can see this was, you know, subdivided out for a subdivision at one time and just sitting there for years and years.
Because it floods.
Yeah, and then again, it's part of where we can, you know, I think a lot of these other ones are delinquent too, all these other parcels outside to the west there. And I think, you know, Lake County Parks is eyeballing those as well. So I think we work together, we can consolidate and, you know, secure all the property, and then we can move towards more of a design phase. So.
Go ahead, Tom.
Would it be possible for you to list the number of properties impacted by each of those alternatives?
Yeah, because the engineering estimate doesn't include any of the land acquisition costs.
That's correct. And so I think you, one of the one question was how many properties are benefited.
Each alternative obviously impacts a different number of permanent structures. And
yep.
I'm just curious to know, like, you know, bang for the buck, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Derek, what do you think about that? Because isn't that the wetlands up by, I call it lateral 6 along I-65, doesn't Shirley Hines own that? We had multiple conversations about all of that. So, I mean, what's your overview of some of this?
Well, just looking at it, and I agree, I think it's a really nice presentation. I appreciate the information. Thinking about structures, the headwaters, as you mentioned, Shirley Hines Land Trust owns the Griner Nature Preserve, which is bisected, I think, by lateral 6. There just is not a lot of homes along Liverpool Road, and the headwaters is basically on the backside of the school. So if you're looking at the number of structures impacted, I want to say that it's there are more structures that would benefit from alternative one than maybe alternative two or three, just looking at it. Would you agree?
I think I would agree with that.
Yeah. You're right, almost all that land near the headwaters is low and flat and holds water year-round, whether there are beaver there or not. The railroad track near the north, I think that had its culvert cleaned out 2016-2017, something like that. So there's a lot of beaver that have been up in that area.
Yeah, absolutely.
To Commissioner Gazdecki's point about the properties impacted in one of the earlier slides, I believe there was 400 properties that you mentioned, and are those currently requiring FEMA additional flood insurance, and how does these proposals affect those individuals? I think that's kind of...
The 400 are kind of on the high risk.
That's correct. So these 439 were based on the modeling that we did. In this Meadow, and I call it Meadowdale Lateral because that's what's on the FEMA maps, but Meadowdale Lateral, the flood mapping through here actually stops at the Harrison Middle School. And so, and this is a unique situation where you've got a 7.2 square mile watershed, and only the very, very bottom of that is actually in mapped by FEMA as floodplain. And so that's why there aren't many structures in the FEMA regulatory floodplain, but when we did our analysis and what we saw in 2008, there are a tremendous number of structures. Every red dot on this map is a structure that's impacted during the 100-year flood, and it's much more than what we've shown on the FEMA maps because that mapping stops so far out of the watershed.
Thank you.
I think there's a general internal discussion about this railroad bridge again, and these four or five houses that could be impacted with this wall of water theoretically, and I think that's something that we'd like to explore a little bit deeper,
because we love railroads.
I mean, we've seen the positive impact of just opening something up like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But would that, if something like that happened, would that eliminate all the work that would be required outside of lateral 6 with the storage and the headwater work? Or is that just moving the water faster to get to, I mean, right now it's just looping from Hobart all the way back into Hobart, right? Mm-hmm. So, right. But the golf course, I mean, between Innsbruck and Turkey Creek, we'd much rather have water store there. Members might not like that, but then the houses and the places that it's going to now. But I don't know how that impact works, other than it flows downhill, right?
Yeah.
So, and if there's, and I don't know how we would go about that. I mean, is that something from the municipality in interacting with the railroad? Or is that something that we have to reach out with that? Because they're immediately going to deny it, and it's going to cost them, a significant amount of money. But in the big picture, this is no walk in the park either.
I think once you get your answer, if you charge them with that to go and see if there's no negative impact downstream or if it has some positive impact upstream, then I think we have a great relationship with the railroad. We'll see what they would have to say about it. I mean, depending on what they would tell you. I mean, you don't want to put extra water on not only former pedestal structures, it could be 50. And so then how does that impact those folks downhill? The good thing for us in Hobart was we didn't have any structures impacted when we opened it up. It was wide enough. The channel was wide enough. I'm not super familiar, Matt, certainly more familiar with what he's got downstream from that railroad crossing as far as structures, roads, houses, whatever it is.
If you're talking for structures, we have looked at buyout programs and things like that. That's kind of options.
Absolutely.
So if it came down to that, those are some options to consider.
But just with the amount of structures, Matt, I mean, those things are ongoing. I mean, with that many just in this segment, I mean, I'm having a tough time wrapping my head on how often, and with that many different municipalities, even though it's a regulated drain and they're limited sources, how are you maintaining that just to put eyes on it? I mean, I know we ran into a lot of issues just with lateral 6 with them, just to get it, making sure that I-65 didn't flow. And that's still a huge part of this, too. I mean, that whole interstate is surrounded by all this wetland and all this water. And, I can't speak to anybody else. I worry about that one all the time. Now, all the homes are equally as important, but, I mean, how do we try to clean the table all at one time? That's kind of do it, if not systematically, from a stage by stage, where we cannot, have to bite the whole thing off versus just kind of having a thought process to get us that done. So, I don't know. Those are my thoughts. And then maintaining it. I mean, the maintenance of this thing. I mean, is the municipality also assisting the county with the maintenance of it through your funding mechanism, or is it strictly the county and their $1.4 million budget?
Yeah, for lateral 6 and all the regulated drains, that's money spread so thin.
Yeah, it's not going to get there. So all the work done, and then we're back to every 12 years, and then is it, how do we overcome that challenge?
I think strategically those cycles should be looked at a little closer and how often they come back and visit different areas based upon the level of impact and the urbanization surrounding these regulated drains. But I know they try to spread it really across, obviously, the entire county, north and south shed, but if you look at the more rural areas that have less of an impact on homes, obviously in urbanized zones. But again, it's the challenge of dealing with drainage and maintenance. It's not going to go away. So that's part of the challenge of the system.
Because we're really good at spending a lot of money to fix and build stuff, not so good at taking care of it.
I have another question with regards to the structures that are impacted. There's, to my knowledge, there is no stormwater collection system in that area currently. Solid curbs, no collection, no runoff. Everything has to be runoff. I mean, there's no drainage.
I think there's storm sewers, but there's no, the very little detention ponds or anything like that.
Right. Sewers. Right. We have, you know, lateral 7 that converges to lateral 6. You got Bonner Lake, you know, but that's a whole other thing that we're looking at, and actually lowering that hull a little bit and get storage out of Bonner Lake itself. That's kind of a low-hanging fruit.
Because I was curious to know what type of just interior flooding issues you have from a big event before it even is impacted by this whole system.
We've got some interceptions that are massive problems right now. 56 and Grant is one of them. That's something that continuously, again, land is a limiting factor. This was all built without detention. So looking outside of the corporate limits is one of our best options because we don't have the property. We looked at the Tuckup County easements from the Hickory Ridge Lake Apartments at 57 in Cleveland there, met with their board. This would help. We got a layout of that detention basin and just can't get these. You know, it just makes no sense to me that it would help them. And we'll actually fund it and build it, but it's like, they just, you know.
Did they say no or they just didn't act?
They didn't act. And again, it was one of those, land is our limiting factor. We don't have the property. We've got to take out neighborhoods in order to put detention.
Is that in town limits, or is that unincorporated Hickory?
Town limits.
That's in town limits.
Yeah. They got some property on margin areas around them. So we laid it all out and showed them.
I just want to say thanks, because this is when we instructed you guys to go further and to kind of put you through the meat grinder. This is what we were looking for.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Absolutely. And you can see why. I mean, it's again, moving the expanse to the point where it's a community and it goes beyond it and all the water, and you have to deal with it, but there's all the people are in your, you know, jurisdiction. But, and then, all right, what's the ask on this, or is there more?
There's no ask on this, but I know further down in the agenda, we have the Kaiser Ditch sub-watershed that actually is on the other end of this, converging all meets into Turkey Creek. I know the application may come in last minute for you guys. I don't get a chance to look at it. I have DLZ here to answer any questions with regards to that. And essentially, we're looking at four crossings as part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for these gentlemen, but I haven't had a chance to review it.
If you need more time, but if you have questions now, we do have a DLZ here that could field any questions.
I'm still needing to catch up on this, because this is heavy lifting. So yeah, thank you, and if we can maybe defer that would be appreciated. Okay. And I know that, well, let's just leave it at that.
And again, I appreciate your guys' support on this. You know, again, this has allowed us to look beyond our corporate boundaries and kind of bring a more regional approach to
that's the only fix. And I'm still of the opinion in how do we work through the city of Gary and unincorporated Lake County and be able to assist in trying to make sure those things are taken into consideration. Because, again, it's no different than just forcing the water somewhere else and making them deal with it. I mean, another challenge. Great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, any other questions on that one? Mr. Repay, anything you want to chime in about? Nope. All right. Deep breath. Moving right along. Other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to open proposals for tree cutting along a section of Deep River and Lake Station and award to the lowest and most responsive bidder, pending review by attorney and staff.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. The discussion is we're opening up proposals to cut down trees. Hopefully they're all cottonwoods.
Yep, all cottonwoods. You allowed us to do this about a year ago, and because of the timing of the project, we didn't want to cut them down too early, otherwise we'll be subject to dumping on these properties. So that's why we did it now.
And this is associated with?
The Lake Station levee.
Thank you.
So the first bid that we have is from Kyleman's Tree Service, LLC, lump sum, $127,000. The The second one here by RAR Oros is $90,644. And all the insurance is here. The attorney, Mr. Whitland, has already reviewed the contract, and because of the time sensitivity, we'll just review it, he'll look at it, and then we would like to proceed as soon as possible.
Those are the only two?
Those are the only two. We, just to give you a background, we invited 12. There was two additional that asked for more information on it. Six or seven showed up to the meeting, two submitted.
It's a great economy out there, I guess, huh? All right, so we have a motion, we second, we have that all done. Are you looking for us to do anything with that now, or are we finished with this one, Mr. Wicklund? I don't know.
I think you just have to vote on it.
All right. Mrs. Lambert, we're voting on the motion and a second for, what, Dan to open them up and go through the response of bidder.
And award.
And award.
Tom Schlumpy?
Yes.
Tom Vasecki?
Yes.
Derek Nimitz?
Yes.
Dave Castellano?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
Robert Oji?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
Yes. Well, don't leave me hanging. Who are you warning it to?
It's going to be, if you were listening, it was R.A.
Oh, okay, good. Well, this is official. I don't want to assume anything.
I'm not telling you.
All right, next up.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve an agreement with Applied Ecological Services in the amount of $11,650 for herbicide treatment at the sandbar modification site near Kennedy Avenue.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, and a second. Mr. Repay, I know all about the sandbar. What's going on? We're not growing more trees on it, are we?
No, we don't want to have invasive species on it. So, as a part of the monitoring, when we took the material out of the river and we had to push it to the side of Kennedy Avenue, we have a period of time where we have to monitor it. And there has been some invasive species that have located there, and now this will allow us to spray for the invasive species so that more native species will be active.
On the sandbar that we don't want there.
That DNR and IDEM wanted there.
Okay, discussion, Mr. Nimitz. Why are we worrying about something as far as invasive species and stuff on a sandbar that has residual impact because of the hard ditch sediment? Why are we worrying about the phragmites that are everywhere?
So I think this is specific to reed canary grass and purple loosestrife, and it's probably a requirement of the permit for mitigation, which is managed by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management.
That's correct.
And it's not on the island within the river, it's adjacent to it.
It's from the material that we took that was the island, and we had to move it to the
land side
east corner of Kennedy Avenue.
So my TV.
What's that? I didn't catch it.
Am I on TV?
You are recorded.
Okay. So we have to do this as part of the mitigation as we're going through a new permit to take out that island again.
This is the first one. The second time when we are going to remove the island, we are asking it to be removed completely so we won't have that. However, it'll be a little bit more costly because you're moving it out of the channel.
Okay, any other questions on this one?
It's not Derek's fault.
Well, I know, but it is. He's a big guy. He can handle it. He understands it. There's no common sense and logic here. All right, any questions? All right, Mrs. Lambert got a motion and a second for $11,000 for herbicide treatment.
Tom Schlumpy?
Yes.
Tom Vasecki?
Yes.
Derek Nimitz?
Yes.
Dave Castellano?
Yes.
Yes.
Robert
Oji?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William.
No. Just to be indignant. All right, moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, now that the leaves are going to start to fall and we know how important it is to understand what's going on within the entire watershed, I'd make a motion to to approve an agreement with Aerial Solutions in the amount of $108,500 for a visual inspection of Hart's Ditch and Deep River.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay.
You had asked for this to be proposed. It'll be three segments, but two of our major, or two only channels into the Little Cal, that being Hart Ditch from the confluence all the way back to Main Street, and then for Deep River from the confluence all the way back to Lake George. Two purposes. One, both are very difficult to
access.
And secondly, from a historical perspective, there's going to be a lot of changes going on throughout those, both of those channels in the coming years. And it will help us visually, and then it'll help the future see as far as what was there at one point in time.
Just for a benchmark, can you remind me how much it was when they did this for the actual Little Cal River? You remember?
I don't.
It was about $40,000.
$40,000.
The difference, I mean, just so you know, that technically, and I'm not a drone specialist, but you can't cross over roadways, and so you have to fly, and you have to have a visual on your drone at all times. And with the size of these trees, you're going to have, it's going to be difficult to keep an eye on it as far as when it goes through the, I can only imagine what Hart Ditch is going to look like.
Okay. Any other questions on this one?
Mr. Chairman, just a question. It looks like the proposal's from 2018. Just wanted to make sure that it's still valid.
Right. So they initially did it in 2018. We deferred it. I asked them if the numbers were still good. They confirmed the numbers are still good and to go with what they sent me in 2018.
Thank you.
Did we put this aerial that was so cool about the river on the website?
It should be there.
Yes. All right. I get it. Any questions? Either or none. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Schilke.
Yes.
Tom Vesecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave
Castellano.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert
Ochi.
Yes.
Ron
Whitaker.
Yes.
Wade Baker. Yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chair, we're making a motion to table the Maryville Stormwater Utility Watershed Application for Kaiser Ditch.
There's a motion and a second?
Second.
All right, we talked about why. Appreciate it. Let's do the vote anyway. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Schilke.
Yes.
Tom Vesecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave
Kaufman. Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert
Ochi. Yes.
Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. I actually thought about it. Move right along.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we go ahead and table the extension of the leaf compost agreement with the solid waste management district.
There's a motion to table. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? No discussion. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Schilke.
Yes.
Tom Vesecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellano.
Yes. Yes.
Robert
Ochi.
Yes.
Lamont
Whitaker.
Yes. Yes. All right, next up, my favorite statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us make sure something like 2008 doesn't happen again, please step up to the podium. State your name and all that good stuff, and let's go.
Robert Mangus, 1324 Elliott Drive in Munster. The Northcott Bridge, I understand, had to be closed recently. Yet when I was on the Munster Council, we spent the money to reconstruct it to be a siphon bridge because the county wouldn't replace it being too new a bridge, as they did with Columbia, where we spent the money to raise it. But I understand the Army Corps won't approve that siphon bridge, so we have to seal it off. And as I thought that process through, if we seal it off, and water exceeds the 500-year level and goes over the wall, the only dry spot's going to be the deck of the bridge, not the neighborhoods. So I'm baffled as to why that has to be done and why we're not getting the benefit of having that bridge rebuilt to be a siphon bridge.
Absolutely. I mean,
so
not my answer.
Well, my answer might not be any better. When the town and the city of Hammond were both considering this bridge, we asked the Army Corps to intervene and ask if they would certify this bridge. And they said from the very beginning that it wouldn't be certified as a closure structure for their project. Because of somehow it was designed and their engineers didn't feel comfortable. If you look at it now, there are some gaps in that air quote siphon bridge that would cause it to probably leak a little water if it got up above the deck of the bridge. Secondly, because our agreement is with the Army Corps, with the federal project, they mandated the closure to be 597 and a half, and we're going to do that. It won't be the only dry spot because we tie it into the wing walls that were tied in by the bridge as well. So that should be a perfect seal. We have a tie-in with the wing wall that was initially there when you had the water bladder. And for whatever, I guess, reason, that it was built anyways. But we all knew, I think back 7 years ago, that that was never going to be certified. And so when the question was asked, would we have to close it? And the answer was always, yes, we'd still have to close it.
That was way nicer than I would have answered.
Well, I'm trying to be
very good.
Extremely Thanks. Disappointing to discover that I was never informed of that.
I can tell you.
We wouldn't have approved it.
I can tell you that.
Spend the money.
The city engineer, the town engineer was aware of that.
Yes, he was. Okay.
Sorry.
So we have to wait until the county says it's old enough to replace the bridge and get it high enough to be able to keep it open like Columbia.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Monty.
Yeah, you're on the approach to do something like that.
Take it out. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Commission. Councilor David Nellens, Town of Munster. I just wanted to mention I've been walking the neighborhoods, talking to a lot of folks. I won't say that they're totally comfortable with the levee, but I will say that they are a lot more comfortable and a lot more relaxed with what's going on. Again, they get anxious when the water level gets up. But again, I want to compliment the commission and what you've done. And in my talking with them, I've mentioned that this present commission has done a lot more. And with the collection of the fee on each of the parcels, it has given them the opportunity to do work, do improvements, keep up the levee, and it's made a big difference. I mean, I've been attending these meetings since 2008, and I've learned a lot, and I appreciate you being here in Munster most of the time, and it's easier for our residents to get here. And again, I just want to say that I think it's been a lot more productive. Again, when you have some revenue coming in and you have something to work with, and when you have projects, you now have some matching dollars if you get grants, and I think that really makes a difference. So I want to thank you for all your work and making things better for the residents, all the way up and down the levee and the river, and again, what you're doing for Hobart and everything else, that's good. All the watershed needs to be taken care of. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi there. Laura Zalno, Forest Avenue in Hammond. I haven't talked to you guys in a while. I, too, was out spending quality time on the river during our last rain event. I don't ever see a time when I won't do that, just because more eyes are better. We did go from the state line all the way to the high velocity channel. I got to tell you, the water that comes down Hart's Ditch is unbelievable, and if anybody were to ever fall in it, they would certainly perish based on the speed that water travels. But I too was very well pleased. I know Northcott was closed. We did get some water into the detention that came with the spillway at the state line, but it certainly did not fill that area. It did not overflow into Bernice. It did fill the Frisbee Park, but did not go over that second embankment over the river, over to the road. So I too was very well pleased with how the river performed this time.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir.
John Beckman, 243 Detroit Street, Hammond. Any progress on the Longwood Golf Course?
Dan?
Well,
you do a lot better at that than I do.
There has been discussions with the town of Dyer regarding Longwood Golf Course. And I can just leave it at that. I really can't get into much more detail.
Has there been a meeting with Will County people yet?
We've had discussions with the town of Dyer and Lake County.
Okay. So it's an ongoing discussion?
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Possibly pick up, Steve.
Tidbit, thank you. Anybody else? Going once, going twice. Giddy up, I'll entertain a motion after I tell you that the next meeting is on a Wednesday, which is always the second Wednesday. Check the website on the location. That will be November 13th. Wait, let's do something a little bit different, because I would like to hear about Mr. Castellanos and his radio show.
Oh, well, thank you, Commissioner. First of all, I do want to make a statement. Recently, in the paper, you read about Gary was considered miserable city to live in, and I just want to let everybody know that we cannot, as residents of Northwest Indiana, let anybody from outside this community define us who we are and what we're about. There's a lot of great projects that's going in Gary, and there's a lot of good people moving back into Gary, young folks, and it's really improving the area, and it's coming back, and just to let you know that when Gary improves itself, it helps the whole community. All of Northwest Indiana improves. Your property value improves. Your education value improves. Everything improves right from there. So the purpose of the WLTH radio station is to that I'm involved with the commission, is that we talk about these projects that uplift the city. And I'm going to be talking about that on this Monday coming up on the 14th. I've got a guest coming in from Chicago who represents the United States Minority Contractors Association. And they're coming in to go ahead and assist themselves and to help us help build that city up in Northwest Indiana. Also, recently the HUD administrator for this region here also came to Gary a couple of days ago, and they enacted a new program called Vision One that's going to help not just Gary but all of Northwest Indiana. So look forward to it, because it's going to bring in more money and more opportunities and more projects that's going to enhance the whole community. One thing that this particular group didn't talk about is that the Gary and all of Northwest Indiana is one of the most diverse communities in all of the state of Indiana. You're never going to find a community of Northwest Indiana that's comprised of African Americans, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Serbians, Croatians, other Greeks, and if I miss anybody, Irish and Scottish or whatever, but this is truly a melting pot community, and I'm proud to be a part of it. Thank you.
Bob, anything to add?
No. Just no comment.
Welcome. Yes. No comment. You can't do that. Garrett?
I'd just like to welcome Mr. Oshie here to the commission. We're happy to have you. I also want to say thank you for the presentation today from Maryville and about the Meadowdale upper kind of storage opportunities. Thank you. Well done. Thank you all for the public for attending tonight.
Sir Guy Stackey.
Well, I'd echo Derek's comments welcoming Bob. I've been on the commission since 2012. I think this is the first time that we've had a full commission of 9 members, which is nice to see. I'm proud of what we've accomplished. I look forward to accomplishing a lot more. And one question I have for Mr. Repay is, when do you think we might, I know that we got some information regarding remediation of getting rid of some of these fragmites. And the information we got was that you really need to establish a a test area to see what kind of, and get a measured progress.
They're going through our map, the properties that we own, and they're going to try to determine and give us a couple options that we want to pursue. So they're looking right now to see something that's manageable, that doesn't cost a whole bunch just to do a test. So they're looking, they haven't gotten back to me yet.
Is that something that if they would pursue, would that be done this year or would be next spring?
Yeah, I don't know about the phragmite, how the growing season, what you have to do to...
So I think the opportunity is going to be missed for this year based on the timing of how that particular plant species grows. I wouldn't anticipate actual control until mid-summer of next year, just knowing the dynamic of how to control it.
That's why they're probably taking as long as they are looking at it.
I'd just like to see us try to start tackling the issue.
I agree. Be a good initiative. Is that it?
That's all. Thank you.
Mr. Wyszlinski.
Welcome, Bob. Welcome to the party. Well, nice to have a full compliment, as Tom said. And I do want to say, Matt and Darren, that was a good presentation. Appreciate it. Okay.
Mr. Whitaker.
I'd like to welcome everyone here and thank you for coming out. I had the opportunity to visit the neighborhood where Ruth is at, and she actually showed me some of the work that the commission did in the past in the Army Corps, and it was pretty enlightening. I had an opportunity to talk to a few neighbors there as well. And I don't know what stage we're at with Lake Station and Marshalltown. I've read through some of the reports here. But at some point in time, we'll have a design for the levee. And hopefully it's something that can be shared, what the proof of concept is, and so that we can have a general idea of, I guess, what everybody's looking at, what they will be walking into.
As far as Lake Station, mm-hmm. You could probably have that next month when it becomes a lot more clear after we meet with DNR and their levy team to make sure that it works. And
okay.
We've adjusted internally on some things that we wanted to see and not see, and then we'll present, and then you guys can see it and certainly offer your suggestions, and we can walk through that.
I think that would be a good idea. You know, maybe we can entertain having a meeting in that area November or December, since that's something that they'll be impacted by and probably show them what's going on. Other than that, that's all I had. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Ware, echo everybody's comments. Welcome, Commissioner Ochi. Being a new guy on the board, I want to thank those currently and then the past commissioners, to echo some of the comments from the public tonight. We've had a couple of recent high water events in the last year or so, and the work that has been done, thanks to the funding that was provided, it takes money to do things. There's been a lot of change, and hopefully the residents can feel comforted in the work that has been done, and you know, our commitment to continue that work. Thanks to the comments from the public this evening, and to Dan and the staff and everyone during the recent high water events. Dan did a great job keeping the board informed about what was going on and his communications back and forth. So thank you, Dan.
Mrs. Lambert?
I'm good.
Mr. Wicklin?
Nothing to add.
Mr. Repay, you want to talk some more? All right. All right, we'll do, like I said, the next meeting, second Wednesday, will be the 13th. Check the website out of location. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Thanks for coming out, everybody. Appreciate it.